Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 78. It's August 17th, 2020. May 22nd, 2017. Writing and speaking. I got a lot of comments about the two videos I posted last week, suggesting that I've nailed the art of public speaking. I don't know about that. I'm a harshest critic. But I do believe that writing regularly makes it so much easier to speak publicly in unscripted situations. Writing forces you to work out your views and articulate them clearly and concisely. Then, when you are asked a question related to those views, you've already worked out the answer. It is in the brain, waiting there to come out crisply and concisely. I've been writing daily for going on 14 years, so that is a huge body of work, opinion, thought, and insight to be able to pull from. My views have evolved over the years, and so not all of the content is relevant at this point, but most of it is. So if you have to speak publicly a lot, particularly in unscripted situations, I would suggest you write publicly regularly as well. They work incredibly well together. That's another post from Fred Wilson of Union Square Ventures. I think I read three of them last week. And so this one is later than the other three. It's from 2017, still already 3 years ago. Time flies. And I wanted also to continue from here back into Chuck Aldrich's unschooling rules with two or three of his entries. So here we go. Tests don't work. Get over it. Move on. During the latter part of the 19th century and the first half of the 20th, the number of doctors rose dramatically. This despite the fact that doctors did not help their patients, and in many cases they made things worse. There was a desperate need for doctors that overwhelmed the reality. That brings us to today's school-based technique of testing. The vision is to have concentrated moments of pure evaluation where students are asked to demonstrate what they know. And we want tests to work so badly. We love the idea of a simple-to-deploy, objective mechanism that can sort, motivate, and diagnose, the equivalent of quality control at a car manufacturing plant looking for defects. The only problem is that tests do everything wrong. Tests only test the test taker's ability to prepare. Pages sticking together. To prepare and take tests. For example, there's no skill worth having that can be measured through multiple choice exam. Worse, tests emphasize exactly the wrong skills. They emphasize the memorization of massive amounts of facts that neurologically have a half-life of about 12 hours. They focus on short-term rewards through cramming to compensate for a failure in long-term development of value. It's no wonder we have financial meltdowns caused by successful students. We have to swallow a hard pill. The issue is not how do we make tests better, or how can we have more or different types of tests, or how do we arrange for more parts of a school program, such as a teacher's worth, to be based on tests. The reality is, tests don't work except as a blunt control and motivation mechanism for the classroom. The academic equivalent of MSG or sugar in processed food. In place of schools as testing centers, we have to begin imagining and setting up learning environments that involve no tests at all, that rely on real assessment and the creation of genuine value instead. There is an alternative, because the future is portfolios, not transcripts. Schools and students live and die by transcripts, the one or two pages that list all the classes taken and the grades received. File cabinets of transcripts create a uniform, easy-to-compare mechanism to stack rank the relative worth of students, or at least they try. The truth is, those transcripts compress outright lose more information and insight than they retain. Instead, the future is student portfolios. Portfolios are skimmable but dense collections of media that show off a person's capabilities and passions. They can exist in both electronic and paper form. Many students at graduate levels, as well as professionals, already use portfolios, of course. Artists, architects, and producers, as just a few examples, all have portfolios that they shape over time and present to potential partners or customers. The best student portfolios must feature those these attributes, among others, if they are to be of most value. The collections of work will cover years, even decades. Only over time can the threads of passions and other themes be drawn. They will be multimedia, using words, photographs, and video clips. They will include external validation where appropriate. This may include awards, references in local papers, and letters of thanks from recipients. Portfolios have one inherent risk, however. The presentation of an activity can become more salient than the activity itself. The person who spends months in the maintenance of her favorite hiking trail should not be overshadowed by someone who spends 1 hour on a great photo shoot. Authenticity and accomplishment over time, rather than slickness, must remain the key to a university or an employer using portfolios as part of an assessment process. In the future, people will increasingly present this type of portfolio, whether applying to a college or for a new job. They would do well to heed the warning in the preceding paragraph. One of the biggest beneficiaries of this shift will be the college admissions and HR people, who can see applicants once again as actual people and make judgments accordingly. And portfolios are easier if you keep a focused journal. One of the most powerful tools for developing a new situational awareness is accurately and comprehensively recording something relevant. For example, for 1 month, write down everything you eat in terms of calories. Write down everything you spend. Take a picture from the exact same spot of a construction site or a garden in spring. Measure the rainfall per day. Record the number of steps you take each day. Record the number and types of commercials during a consistent half hour of television. Record the number and makes of cars that get through red lights during a consistent half hour. This collapses time and draws attention to patterns that otherwise would be noise. It also helps overcome the subjectivity and superstition of personal experience. I'll stop there. It's nice to bridge from Fred Wilson over to Chuck Aldrich, and it puts right back on the table tons of stuff that we've covered: revising prose, Austin Kleon, the Acton School, a lot of it. I like the idea of regularly writing and speaking, and that if you get in the habit of writing, it just clears your mind. You formulate your ideas. You reformulate your ideas. You're ready. Sort of Ben Hogan, get a grip. And even that reminds me, Harvey Pienick in The Little Green Book, a sequel that he co-wrote with Bud Schrake, advising golfers to keep journals, not just about their scores and swings, but all the other factors going on in their life in context with their golf game to see if they can tease out patterns. And it's very just deliberate practice, and a lot of stuff from the talent code about just being conscious and deliberate, having a goal or having an objective for a particular block of time, and taking some readings. It's all really cool stuff. I thought about it over the weekend. I haven't started it over the weekend. Had a pretty relaxing weekend here. But, you know, I've been getting up early in the morning and mostly just puttering around. If I get up at before 5 in the morning, I don't really feel like going out and running when it's dark. I've done some of that. And maybe I will start to run so that maybe while I'm out, the sun will rise. It starts to get light, I guess, around 6:30-ish. 6:45, it's sort of much brighter. Maybe I'll do that. But I could write some in the mornings. Evenings might be good. But just the idea of a daily block and really producing something every day. And it's clear that I need to get serious time into revising. And as I just continue to think about this, it's very helpful to pair off at times to, you know, a running partner. If you're going to get up early in the morning and go running, in the past used to help me a lot to have somebody that I would meet. Otherwise I might just hit snooze. And I think what might be really interesting is to ask some of the regulars who might want to pair off or into groups of four and answer to each other in very small groups with the writing and to help revise each other's writing. I think a regular process, collaborative circle, if you will, something that's within the regulars a little more focused, the small groups would afford us that luxury of we could still have the big tent where everybody has different professions and pursuits and passions, but maybe we could group off for a writing component that was like that. All these kinds of things have just been on my mind lately. It's fun to think about, and we shall see what happens next. Y'all have a good one. I had an issue where I just wasn't getting these thrown out onto the internet. I'll start doing that again, and I do want to get back to where I record them and post them before I even really get cracking in the morning. So we'll see if I can get back there. I've definitely been getting up early. I forgot to set an alarm last night, fell asleep, and I woke up a couple minutes before 5 without it. It's pretty great. Thanks, y'all.